This is Game On. With your host, Seat Williams. Game On!
Let's get a cracking. 3 o'clock, standing tall, feeling good here on a Thursday. Seat Williams, Ari, he's in the ones and twos, the Wheels of Steel. Going to be joined bottom of the hour, sneaking in a guest to do dope with us, Mark Seidel. He's our program director, and we'll tell you why later in the show. Got the giveaway coming up to the Shriners Children's Hospital Golf Tournament, TPC, in Summerlin. We'll do that if we get time later. If not, we'll have to double up on it on Friday. Well, actually, next week. Friday's a little different story. Scott Spreitzer, though, he's going to join us right here live in the studio as we speak. WagerTalk.com, as we do every Thursday. Scott, how are you, brother?
I'm doing well. I just got one favor to ask of you.
What you got?
When Mark Seidel's in the room, just say, man, if you lost 20 pounds, you'd look just like John Smoltz.
You know, he does have a smoltzy look, huh?
But mess with him, you know, if you lost 20 pounds.
Oh, my God.
I told him earlier today, I was like, David, you look like John Smoltz. Every time I watch John Smoltz.
Who does this guy across from you look like? Quarterback in the NFL. Man.
I'm a quarterback of the NFL. Aaron Rodgers.
He looks just like
him. Yeah. You're kind of a cross between Aaron Rodgers and I'm spacing
really
off the
small,
actor's name.
Non-football player.
But the actor's name, and I'm spacing his name off. He played the real jerk in Wedding Crashers.
With the guy who said chocolates.
He was in Hangover. The Hangover.
I know who you're talking about.
You know what I'm talking about. You're kind of a cross between Aaron Rodgers and I can't even think of his name.
So he's
now.
Not good looking, is what you're
nor strong.
Scott, we'll get to all the other stuff. Of course, football game tonight. Two real interesting ones. One in college. We'll see what Stanford can do, and we'll see if Love plays. And then the Ravens, Dolphins. But I have to say this. In my memory, and you know me, I was a baseball guy. I can't recall seeing a baseball game that was better than the one I saw last night.
That was a blast, start to finish. I had no action on the game. I played game one. I stood off game two. And, man, it was exciting. I mean, I tell you what, it was exciting 15 minutes before the game when you had Vin Scully on the field and he brings out Fernando Valenzuela and Steve Yeager. I mean, I was sitting there, I was like, Vin, you know, and then Fernando. Uh-huh. And so it was a blast even before the game began. And then the game was just incredible. I mean, that's an instant classic, as we used to always call them.
Yeah.
And some bad management by Dave Roberts. Oh. I like Dave Roberts, but you don't pull Rich Hill after four innings and 60
and he's
pitches.
On.
Exactly. And we were doing the show yesterday. We were previewing last night's game, and I was talking about the numbers. Rich Hill's numbers, like in seven starts leading up to last night, he had like a 2.13 ERA. His whip was like 0.84. And his previous 38 innings pitched, he had 52 strikeouts. And I was saying on yesterday's show, let him go through five at least if he's doing well. If he completes five and he's only got maybe 75, 80, 85 pitches under his belt and he's still got him mesmerized, keep him in the sixth. You don't pull him just because you've got this fantastic bullpen. For one thing, you could do damage to your bullpen for the remaining, you know, portion of the World Series. That was a bad move. And I've been a Dave Roberts fan. I mean, you have to count on one hand the number of bad calls he's made throughout the course of the season. But last night was major. And I gave him an F for the way he managed his pitchers last night from Rich Hill. And then when you start bringing in reliever after reliever, after all of a sudden, guess who's pitching last, who gives up the home run?
Yeah.
Brandon McCarthy, who hasn't pitched in 24 days. So yeah, it was bad managing.
He overmanaged his bullpen. You know what? For one, it's like I'm looking at this. I'm like, why? Well, we didn't see him take him out because after four innings, there was another pitcher out there. I'm like, what?
Yeah, exactly. This and Rich Hill wasn't happy about it.
Rich was out there doing his thing, and Rich was pissed. So then he's like switching this guy out. You know, you had Morrow in game one coming in the eighth, then your boy closed out Jensen in the ninth. I mean, you know, you're set up to bring in maybe one of those other guys in the sixth, seventh inning, do things right. To me, the key, I thought this, I could be way off because the Astros, maybe they would have raked anyway, but the key play in the game, I thought, was when Puig went for that ball in right field and missed it. And I say that they were up at the time, 3-1. And Puig knew it. If you know much about baseball, and baseball is the one sport I could really sit here and talk for days on, I won't. But outfield is where I played. And my thing was I fancied making diving catches.
Sure.
And Puig knows this. When you're making that dive, and the great thing about it, he's going to his left, so he doesn't have to reach over his shoulder. It's open. What he did wrong, he did one thing wrong. Everything he did right mechanically, except technically, he knew that he should have had his glove already out. When you're making a dive going that way, you put your glove out already, and you watch the ball go in the glove. He tried to snatch the ball at the last minute, and he didn't have a reach long enough.
Right.
If he's making that dive, you watch great plays all the time. Watch what a guy does. A guy is diving for the baseball, but the glove is already extended.
Yep.
Because then you can watch the ball go in the glove. But it was almost like he was trying to take the glove into the ball.
Yeah.
And he knew it. Yeah. That's why he was pissed, because technically he blew that play. Not, it wasn't an error, because the average guy wouldn't even make close.
Bad decision. Yeah.
But he just technically missed it because he didn't do what he would normally have done. In that would have been one of the greatest plays in the World Series. But it didn't happen. And so then from there, we saw the Astros, they started to rake like they do. And that was a home run fest like I've never seen in any game that mattered so much, Scott. It was nut city, dude.
There have now been 17 extra inning home runs in the history of the World Series. Five of those 17 came in last night's game. Of course, the warm temps. You know, there's the air's light. It's not heavy, so they're flying out of the park because of those warm temps also. For instance, you know, the final home run that was hit, George Springer.
Uh-huh.
His home run probably wouldn't have been a home run on a normal October night at Chavez Ravine, but it was able to carry because of those warm temps and the light air. I got to ask about Yasiel Puig real quickly, because in 2013 when he came up that first month, when he just looked like, oh, my gosh, this guy's a video game, you know.
Yeah.
And I was talking to Keith Law, who's ESPN's baseball guy, and he was saying, watch this kid. He goes, if he gets it together between his ears, he's got the tools to be a five-tool player. And I believed it. And then I had Steve Garvey on a show I was doing, who, by the way, if you could ever get Steve Garvey on a show, oh, my gosh, nicest guy in the world, and he'll talk forever, and a super class act. I had him on a couple of times that particular season. We were talking about Yasiel Puig. And he was telling me that he felt that he could be a five-tool player. At the time, we didn't know if he had it between the ears or not. He had the little immature run there. I get that stuff, I think, a little bit more than a lot of people do, because I always said, like, when you talk about the trouble that Dwight Gooden got into, the trouble that Strawberry got into when they were in their heyday, I'm like, come on, man. You're 19 years old, and you're king of New York, and you got everything you want. It's that – I mean, it's so easy to make the wrong decision. And so Yasiel Puig's a young guy who grows up in a communist nation.
That's the key. He's not even from here.
And he gets cut loose. You know, he's able – you got millions now.
Uh-huh.
And you're cut loose in L.A. I mean, come on. So I kind of get it. And I hope he comes around and completely matures and becomes the incredible player that he can. He's already – he can be a great player, as we've seen in the playoffs. I like his cockiness at times. I like when he stands there and he makes those faces. You know,
licking
I like
his
that.
Bat.
Yeah, and he's licking his bat. All that quirky stuff. I love that, man. So I'm really rooting for this guy to get it all together and to mature. He's going to be an absolute monster if he ever does that and does it before it becomes too late when his talent starts to erode.
Scott Sprite to WagerTalk.com here on the show, Game On. You know, the thing is, and look, we got to remember how young he is. We got to remember how he got here. Brought across, and then some people looking for some money, chasing
him
down.
Up through
Mexico, right? Yep. After him. And he really, you got to realize he's misunderstood, because he's not from here. And now he can speak the king's language a bit. But just remember that he didn't really know how to speak English. He's fresh. He's not even off the boat. He was smuggled across.
Basically,
I mean, he was off the boat. But the point is, he's young and immature, if you want to call it that. I just think misunderstood, because it's a different culture. It's a different world. It's freedom.
I root for guys like that, Seat. I really do.
And he's badass, too. He badass, guys. I'm a millennial. Yeah, he badass. I'm glad the Dodgers didn't trade him. I'm glad, opposed to that, they sent him down to the minors, where he could probably get his head together, back up. Now the teammates understand him a little better. And Davey Johnson's the key to that whole team, though, despite what happened last night and mismanaging the bullpen, because the Dodgers over the last, I don't know, what, 12, 15 years, have always had talent.
Mm.
They've always had guys from different countries, but they never had a manager that could put these guys in the same room together in that clubhouse and make them play as a team.
Yep.
Well, Davey Johnson's the guy that's been able to do that. They got the right guy as the manager. That's the difference in the success of all the money they spent over the years and the winning that comes with it. Their manager is the key.
Yeah, Roberts put it all together. He's called all. Like I said, he's you could count on one hand the bad decisions he's made this season. That's how good it's been. Even during their slump that they had, that almost historic slump that they had at one point of the season when they won what won like one out of 19 games or whatever. It wasn't so much the manager as there was a couple of injuries. Bellinger was out. He missed a bunch of time. Guys weren't making the plays that they had made early in the season. You had Kershaw, who goes by the wayside due to injury for a little while. But when it comes to managerial decisions, I hate to say I'm going to give him a break because it's the World Series, man.
Right.
So you can't really give him a break, but he better not do it again. He better not blow it again. I don't think he will. Have you heard about what's going on with the betting on this game? Did you hear what's going on with that guy from Houston?
No, want to find out.
This is great stuff. And I just found this out from Matt Holt earlier today. I guess there's a furniture owner in Houston, Texas, who has said like it's something to do where he's going to give a $5 million rebate to a lucky customer at his furniture stores in Houston. So what he's done is he's come to the state of Nevada for this Game 3 matchup now, and he's put down money all over the place to try to hedge and get his money back so he can pay that rebate whenever it comes. You know, that's just a short version of this entire story. So when you see this Houston line moving and getting pricier, it's not a situation so much of sharp money. It's I got to go out and save my butt money to pay off that rebate to
is
customers
this a series
in Houston,
or,
Texas.
Or a game by game?
I believe it's tomorrow's game is where he's going to be on. So it's already seen movement where, you know, you got McCullers right now in $1.20, $1.25 in this particular spot. And McCullers, when I look at that game and I'm trying to think, okay, am I going to play this game? Am I going to be involved? I see McCullers being at, when he's at his best, curveball specialist. Guess what? The Dodgers cream curveballs. Mm-hmm. You know, so I'm sitting there going, boy, I don't think I can lay a price with Houston in that particular game. And you, Darvish, has looked pretty good at times. And so I'm going, oh, boy, curveball specialist going up against a team that knocks curveballs around. That's a little scary, I think, if you're laying a price with Houston tomorrow.
Lance McCullers, like you said, he some places now $1.30, 8.5 your total. While you Darvish on the other side, you get Darvish plus money on the other end. I mean, that
with
sounds,
that lineup, with that bullpen, with Dave Roberts, who now knows what he shouldn't do again.
Yeah, he
$1.20 underdog. It might go up a little more with Furniture Boy running around town plucking his money down.
That's a pretty good story. I'll look for more on that, Scott. Scott Sprites at WagerTalk.com here on Game On. All right, let's look at the football game tonight. I mean, you know, it's weird because the energy for that just ain't even close to what we just finished talking about anymore. But the Dolphins and Ravens do it and will do it tonight. 3-37, I believe, somewhere around that. The Ravens, the home team. I think they may end up getting the quarterback back in Miami. But do you believe in the Ravens? I mean, they've been so up and down.
Yeah, first of all, that line 3, 37, 37.5, as you mentioned. I did talk to Matt Holt earlier. They took a six-figure bet on the Miami Dolphins, and they took a $50,000 money line bet on the Miami Dolphins. So, you know, they're actually rooting for the Ravens tonight at the books. As far as, you know, it looks like it's going to be Matt Moore. It's not going to be Cutler. So Matt Moore will go tonight. He's got better ratings numbers under Adam Gase than did Jay Cutler, and seems like his teammates like him a little bit more than they like Jay Cutler. Breaking news there. But you know, Baltimore, you go back to like May and June, man, they just had one serious injury after another. They lose Dennis Pitta, you know, one of the top tight ends of the last decade in the NFL, you know, to injury that cost him his career in the summer. Flacco has the back problems all summer long, and to me, he looks like he's so far from 100% healthy. He's got 5 touchdown passes and 8 picks so far this year. You know, they've already had a game where they scored no offensive points or touchdowns. They've got 4 wide receivers tonight that for Flacco that are either questionable or doubtful, you know, including Macklin. I mean, this team is banged up beyond, you know, repair. Doesn't mean they can't go out and win and cover a 3-point spread, but boy, that's a lot to give up. And then you got to see if Matt Moore can come around. 15 points per game is all this team's scoring. 260 yards per game total offense, just at the bottom of the league in almost every important category. The key to me, to Miami winning tonight, is get Jay Ajayi going on the ground. Give this kid the darn football. Let him run it 15, 20 times. He's down a little bit this year in statistics, but Baltimore is dead last. Could you believe we were saying that about a John Harbaugh defense?
Yeah.
Dead last in the league against the run. Get Ajayi going, man. Get him early play action, play fake with him. Take some heat off of Matt Moore because he does stand in the pocket too long, takes too many hits and sacks. If Ajayi gets going, Miami's going to win this game tonight.
Ajayi describes his running style as angry. Mm-hmm. Yeah, and he does basically move you out the way. When you see him, you say, move, get out the way.
Exactly.
A couple of other games let's look at, and you push in any you'd like or that you may be on. Intriguing, the Raiders at Buffalo. Buffalo, of course, a winning team now. Sure. The Raiders are trying to keep pace with Kansas City, and they're in that division where it's you can see the parity in that division now. Yep. The Chargers winning a couple of games back-to-back, Denver losing a couple. The Raiders struggling, but, you know, Kansas City after losing a couple. So your thoughts about this one? The line is where now? Because it's somewhere between, what, 2 and 3?
Last I saw was 2.5, about a half hour ago. 2.5, Buffalo the favorite, total 45.5. The Bills opened 3 and dropped down a half a point in a lot of books around town. But, boy, that was just a galvanizing performance last Thursday. I had Oakland, I'd like to say easy winner, but you saw what happened against Kansas City, all those penalties at the end of the game, yeah. And they get the touchdown. But you know what I liked out about that? It wasn't just the win and me being able to pad my bankroll going into what ended up being a horrible Sunday in the NFL for me. But when I'm watching that Thursday night game and I saw something that took place that said, that's going to galvanize this team for a little while. Do you remember the controversial hit on Derek Carr around the midfield stripe?
Oh, yeah.
It was the first half, late first half. He got racked up and the officials didn't call what was a helmet first hit on Derek Carr's helmet. By the Kansas City Chiefs, and it was a little bit late. And then you saw some of the offensive linemen getting a little bit angry, and then you saw Marshawn Lynch do a sprint off the bench.
Fastest all year.
Trying to push the referee out of the way to get to the Kansas City player that hit him. That's galvanizing, man. That is galvanizing, because remember that horrible rumor that was going out a couple of weeks ago when they were saying that the offensive line for the Oakland Raiders, which is all African-American, were letting defenders through to hit Derek Carr because he stood for the national anthem. This came out of the Bay Area.
Are you serious?
Yeah, and it was a trashy, horrible rumor. Some people reported it as though it was fact. And so the Raiders were saying, you know, obviously they were saying that's ridiculous. This would never happen. And you know, you played, you know, high-level college baseball and stuff. You know that crap doesn't happen.
No, not on the team.
Not with your teammates. Even if you don't really like your teammate, you're trying to win a Super Bowl. You know, you're thinking as the Oakland Raiders, we got a shot to go deep in the playoffs. So that rumor was tweeted out by a radio guy up in the Bay Area, Northern California, that he so-called had information that the offensive line was letting guys through to hit Derek Carr because he stood for the national anthem.
Now, who's their backup quarterback? Another white guy, right?
I'm trying to think. Oh, no. It's E.J. Manuel.
Okay, it is E.J. Manuel. Not that it matters.
But it was horrible.
You're better with Carr as a quarterback.
The Raiders, the players, they all came out and said that's garbage. You know, don't believe it, the whole thing. Guess what? So E.J. Manuel comes in, African-American quarterback. They still stunk. You know, so, but what I liked
about
that.
They still let him get him, right?
Yeah, so all this fake crap going on from some radio guy or writer in the Bay Area. And it got play. It got play on websites. It got play on some sports broadcast on TV, you know, around the country. And I'm like, oh, come on, man. This is BS. I'm going to trust the player's word on this one. When I saw Marshawn Lynch run out on the field, first of all, there you go. All you guys who spread this nasty rumor, did you see that? Did you see what Marshawn Lynch and the offensive line did when Derek Carr got hit late and got speared, basically? And so I think it's galvanizing, man. I think it's going to last. I think they go into Buffalo and get the win. That was a long-winded version for why I like Oakland, but I think that play brought them together, and then winning the game at the end the way they did, couple of days off extra to prep for Buffalo. I like him in this particular spot.
You know, I wasn't even aware that the entire offensive line was Afro-American for the Raiders. And by the way, Lynch came out to assist Peters, who is not only a guy he's mentoring, but his cousin, who's on Kansas City. It happened. It was the freakiest thing. Lynch, from the grab the ref, he thought it was somebody else. He was like, whoa, hey.
At first, I was actually doing a live podcast, and the TV's on, and sound down. And all I have, I look up, and I saw the hit. Uh-huh. And I'm like, oh, man, I couldn't do it because of the podcast. I was like, that should have been a penalty, you know. Then I see Lynch run. I'm like, oh, my gosh, what's he doing? And I saw him go after the official, corner of my eye. And I thought, oh, my gosh, don't hit the official. That, you know, this is starting to go on like legal stuff here, you know. But, no, he did. We found out that he was schooling his relative out on the field. But also protecting Derek Carr, which I thought
absolutely
was pretty cool.
Was also protecting Derek Carr. Now, Chargers, New England. Chargers have won 2 straight. They go to New England, where New England and Foxborough have lost a couple of games already. So a winnable game for San Diego, or are my hopes up too high here with that game being 7 and about 48.5?
Well, you know, it's it's seven. It's down from 7.5. So there's been enough money coming in on the Bolts plus the points to be able to bring this down a little bit. They've won, as you mentioned, they're, 3-4 now after the horrible start, which I feel a little bit better about myself because I was touting them as a 9-win team this year and a chance to make the postseason. But so it's good to see that they're starting to get things going again. They've got a running game. Guess what? When things started going better for this team, all of a sudden they realized, hey, Melvin Gordon's in our backfield. Let's lighten the load for Phillip Rivers in the passing game. Once they figured out how to use him, they started playing better football overall. I think they could hang this number. I do think by the time, you know, the weekend rolls around, you're going to see a sharp, and I could be wrong, but I think you're going to see a sharp versus public situation where the public's betting on New England and sharper money's coming in on San Diego as long as it's, you know, seven or more. And I might have to jump in on that too. I haven't yet, but listen, New England's had one good defensive game, and that was last week against Atlanta, who can't get out of their own way right now on offense. And I like the Chargers, the way they're playing. And you don't have to worry about that fake home field advantage baked into the line because they're on the road.
Yep, you're right. Finally won one at home on StubHub. Cowboys at Washington. Got to talk about that one. Cowboys about 2.5, 50 your total, 49.5.
Everybody sharp public on Dallas right now leading into this game. Two things about this. I don't know how much credit we give Dallas for the way they whipped San Francisco 40-10. Because San Francisco, every game, like all five games leading up to that, was either a two-point or three-point loss or four games in a row, something like that. They were losing games really tough, you know, in the last minute or, again, losing 12-9, 13-10, 17-14, those kind of games. I think it caught up to San Francisco last week, all the hard-fought games that they lost, and they just got crushed by Dallas. So give them credit, but I don't want to give them too much credit. At the same time, I'm watching the Skins on Monday night against Philly. They come out with a great game plan. They're executing the game plan. They're leading in the game twice. They've got two chances in the first half to put a little space between them and Philly on the scoreboard. Leading the game, they've got second down and one around the Philly 42, 43-yard line. And they decide to throw deep. Goes incomplete. They come up next, and they run the ball between the tackles and they lose yard. They're punting the ball. Okay, great. So then they get it back like, next series or whatever, still leading. They're at midfield again. It's 3rd and 2, and they just are all discombobulated on offense. Had no clue what they wanted to do. They punt the ball again. You're leading the game.
Yeah.
You're playing your game. You have three plays to get a grand total of 3 yards in those two situations, and you can't get even a yard in those three plays. You end up punting. You just left the door open for Philly, who hasn't been playing their game, to start playing the way they want to. And that's the difference between, in Washington, between a team that's a good team that's going to win a few games along the way and, I think, an elite team, because they don't make the biggest key plays of the game when the opportunity's there. And it cost them on Monday night, man. And
yeah,
and that's why I can't back them here. I mean, it's going to be a situation where it's Dallas or nothing for me.
Scott Spritzer, WagerTalk.com here on Game On. Speaking of costing you, I had the over in that game.
Okay.
The upright. Points, yeah, the upright kind of took away my field goal. How did that matter with the books? I mean, because generally speaking, they would have the Eagles, the favorite, and the over.
Yeah.
So did that help the books that field goal didn't go through?
It had to have helped them. You know, obviously the limits are lower on totals, so they never get beat up too badly in the state
parlays.
Of Nevada. But the parlays, exactly. Oh, yeah. The Monday night favorite and over parlays, I'm sure it helped them quite a bit. Because remember, favorites over the entire NFL weekend, Sunday and Monday, went 9-2-2 against the spread. And then there was the Denver-LA Charger game, which you can't really count it because you could have got Denver as a dog, you could have got him as a favorite, whatever. And so 9-2-2 were the faves on the lines that I'm using. But yet when I talked to like Jeff Sherman at the Westgate on Tuesday and Matt Holt a little bit, they weren't talking that they got beat. They were saying, I'm pretty much broke even. And I got to think that fact that those parlays got knocked off on Monday night had to have helped them not get beat over the weekend.
Big league. All right, last two games Sunday night, Pittsburgh-Detroit. Steelers on the road. Boy, this Martavius Bryant story. Now he's on the practice squad. Shut your mouth, kid.
What an idiot.
Listen, you missed a whole year. They still are grooming you. He's a monster, man. I mean, if he can get hit, Yasiel Puig, okay? That's who he is right now. He doesn't get it, but he's American. He should get it. Dude, you're playing you're with the Steelers. I mean, shut up. He's on the practice squad now. He's not going to be in uniform. So the Steelers 3, 45.5, and then Monday night, Kansas City at home to Denver, 7 and about 43, I believe.
Yeah, and Detroit right now is the sharp play. They're getting three times more betting on Detroit from the sharp money than they are on the Steelers. And but the public's five times more heavy on Pittsburgh. So it's a Joe's versus pro situation. The problem for Detroit is that offensive line is so darn banged up. That's the issue with Detroit. I mean, they got like two or three offensive linemen who are on the IR now who are getting a lot of reps. But you mentioned Martavis Bryant. Here's the word to Martavis Bryant. You're not as good as Antonio Brown.
No.
You're very good, but you're not as good as Antonio Brown. So quit trying to, you know, take throws away from him. You're better right now than Juju Smith-Schuster, but he works harder than you do. Juju Smith-Schuster is going to block anybody who comes his way and might get after Big Ben. When's Martavis Bryant out there blocking big guys and, you know, and really working hard to keep guys off the running game or keep guys off of Big Ben? So, man, just settle down. You can be the number two on a potential Super Bowl winner, yes, if you shut your mouth.
And Juju rides a bike everywhere he goes, doesn't have a vehicle. Do you hear
there
that story?
There you go. I did hear that story. It's great stuff.
He got it back. Yep. And finally.
Oh, I thought you were giving me a knuckle crash here.
Yeah, absolutely. No. And finally, the Monday night game.
Oh, yeah. You got right now Denver to Kansas City, obviously doing battle on Monday night. Listen, we saw a couple of weeks ago the Pittsburgh Steelers lay the blueprint for how to play Kansas City after their 5-0 start. Slow down Kareem Hunt, slow down the running game, make Alex Smith go up top and win the game with his arm. He's a good quarterback. He's not a great quarterback. He hasn't won a lot of games just based on what he can do through the air. Denver owns the second stingiest run defense in the NFL. They're pretty awesome against the pass also. But boy, if they can just get the quarterback to play better, whether it's Simeon, no matter who's going to be playing for Denver, you got to take care of the football. So it's tough to trust what they can do through the air. Last time on this field last year at Arrowhead, Kansas City crushed them 33-10. I'm not going to jump in here and paint myself in a corner yet, say who I'm going to be on. But I'll tell you this much. I'm looking for every reason right now to take the points if it gets to 7.5. We're seeing KC 7 minus $1.20. If it gets to 7.5, I'm looking for reasons to take Denver, but I don't want to say I'm not on them yet. I don't want to say I'm going to be on them because I might change my mind the more I dive into it.
Scott, we ran long on baseball, so I'm going to shorten it up a little on college, but we got to start with the game tonight. Stanford, the kid Love, Heisman candidate. He's going to be a game time decision. Stanford 21, 59.5 at Oregon State. Will they have any problems here?
I actually took the points tonight with Oregon State. Gary Anderson resigned a couple of weeks ago. The coach of Oregon State only been there for a couple of years and actually walked into the athletic director's office and said, man, I'm sorry, my head's not in it. You know, I've blown it. I want out. Kind of weird stuff.
That is weird.
Yeah, Corey Hall takes over as the interim coach, and he opens up the offense, and they score 33 points on Colorado. 36-33 loss, but they covered. Close game, could have won. 550 total yards out of a team that was averaging about 300 total yards, all because the interim coach, he's got his head in the game. He's trying to win. He's trying to win a job, and he opens up the offense. You mentioned the running back Love for Stanford being questionable tonight. That's what I saw last time out, that he was questionable. Here's a neat little stat on Oregon State. As bad as it's been, they're 9-3 against the spread their last 12 Pac-12 games. They're 26-9 against the spread in conference play the last 35 times that they've been off a conference loss by no more than 7 points. You know me, I'm not a big trend guy. Those aren't bad. And you got a coach now who's trying to win a job who's also opened up the offense. It was 23.5 when this line opened. And I took a little shot with Oregon State to hang that number. Think it'll fall. Probably Stanford finds a way to win by 14 points.
Because of the time, I'll let you pull two more key college games than in who you already have if you want to put out there. I know one of your games that you're going to at least look at is Penn State, Ohio State.
Beautiful setup for that game, boys. 6 points, 6.5 point spread, Ohio State. They played nobody since the loss to Oklahoma. That's the thing, man. Can they get it done against Penn State, Seat? Because they've played after one offense this season that they faced was Oklahoma. Oklahoma whipped them at the shoe. Since then, they played like Army, Rutgers, Nebraska, Maryland. I mean, just Cupcake City on defense is what their offense has faced. Now they got to face Penn State's defense. If they cannot slow down the effective running of Saquon Barkley, obviously I think they lose the game in that situation. And we found out by McSorley that he could actually make plays when he needs to when things are breaking down against Michigan last week. So I know a lot of people that I respect that like Ohio State by 2 touchdowns in this one. And I'm thinking, boy, JT Barrett's numbers have been fine, but look who he's played the last 4 weeks. When he had to step up against the Sooners, he was dog meat. You know, so listen, I'm leaning towards Penn State. A play that I'll give you that I'm on that I already bet was Washington State minus -3 over Arizona. Arizona's got a great running game, but they built those numbers against horrible run defenses. I know Mike Leach, he always gets credit for all the passing that his teams do. Have you seen that defense this year? They are top shelf elite defensively. They had the one clunker against Cal where they came off the win against USC and laid an egg, were as flat as a pancake. They whipped Colorado last week 28-0. I think the defense slows down Arizona, and they're going to be a little bit too strong offensively. Probably win that game by at least 14 points over Arizona.
What does Mike Leach say to Lubbock, Texas? Give me my money.
Give me my money.
Give me my money.
I love this guy.
Give me my money.
When they beat USC, did you see what he said? When they beat USC?
No, I missed it.
And they asked him, they go, what did it feel like? All the fans running on the field.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. About,
because it reminded me of Woodstock, except people were dressed.
Good stuff. That was good stuff. Scott, let the folks know where they can find you.
On Twitter, at Scott Wins, and the website is wagertalk.com.
Shows, in-house, and then, of course, that people can hear you up on, whether it be Sirius Radio or whatever?
Yeah, we do Monday through Friday with Dave Koken on the Las Vegas Sports Line, and that's every day 2 p.m. to 3 p.m. on the sister channel here, ESPN Radio. And the weekend, man, I'll just kind of tune in
everywhere.
All weekend. I start with Mike Golic at 5 in the morning on Fridays, and I do the 6 a.m. show with Kuiper and Dari Doka on Saturdays, and then Sunday morning's NFL Countdown. I think it's 9:30 our time, 9:35 our time on Sunday morning. So I'm basically on ESPN National from start to finish.
You're
Friday morning,
though,
through,
huh?
Sunday morning. I have a great time. The Saturday morning show is a little tough because I got to get up about 4:30 in the morning and to see where all the line moves have been. And I don't usually get to sleep till about 1 o'clock in the morning. So I get about 3.5 hours of sleep, and then I got to watch all the line moves for my clients at least until 10 in the morning. So it's a situation where you get a little bit tired by Sunday night. Can you say that on Sunday nights I've usually got a nice little glass of some bourbon and Wood? You know, Woodford Reserve bourbon.
Oh yeah,
and maybe Narcos on Netflix or something like that, and then I just don't pay attention to anybody for 12 hours.
You know what? You're still the night owl that I used to know, but only instead of out having a fun time, you're working.
It's for a different reason that I'm a night owl now. Absolutely.
All right, brother. Always
care,
a pleasure.
Man. Good to see you guys.
A Raiders shirt, by the way,
yeah,
huh?
Yeah. Come on here. I'm a fan.
Okay. All right, brother. Scott Spritzer, wagertalk.com here on Game On. Coming up next, Lighters Up. Surprise guest, Dope is next.
Man, I've been saving for a special occasion.
Looks like a quarter pounder, man. Let's the blow.
Man, be careful with that, man.
Is it heavy stuff, man? Will it blow me away?
It's time now for Man, That Show is Dope.
3:38 in the valley. Lighters up. Pass it. This one right here kind of surprises me. Former NBA Commissioner David Stern. He was on Uninterrupted with Cliff Robinson, former NBA player, who had his issues with Stern in the past. And he's talking about Mary Jane, cannabis. David Stern says, you know, I think Commissioner Adam Silver, he should allow players to use medical marijuana, huh? David Stern goes there, and then he went on further to say, in the states where the recreational marijuana is legal, let the players do it. Whoa! Adam Silver came back later and replied, you know what? We're looking into things. We're trying to make things better and more comfortable for the players to make the situations more appropriate in this way and that way, because we understand pills and things of that nature is a hazard. So, look, David Stern, a dude that most of us didn't like. Back in the day, he dealt with a lot of players that were snorting it up and doing some other drugs. But in the end, now he seems to be coming around now that he's no longer in the league. But I commend him for coming out and saying something that I think we all are thinking. You know, we understand it's legal here, both recreational and medically. So for David Stern to come out with that, that's pretty dope. Now, we got a special guest on hand, our program director here, Mark Seidel. And he's a Houston Astro fan. He's in the house. Brother, welcome. It's your first time loading up dope with us.
Yes. So we're going to jump right into it. You said it first. I'm an Astros guy, so you know number one on my list. All right. I'm going to look to my man, Marwin Gonzalez. Home run in the ninth inning. Astros down 3-2. What does he do? He steps up. Hadn't hit a home run all postseason. Steps up to the plate.
Here's the 0-2. And Marwin lifts this one pretty deep to left center field. Taylor on his horse going back at the wall. That's gone! That's gone! Marwin has tied it at 3. Marwin Gonzalez hits a home run to tie the score. His first home run of the postseason. And
music.
Kenley Jansen suffers his first career postseason blown save.
I got goosebumps right now.
13 chances.
And I'm not even lying to you. I have goosebumps right now.
So what do you consider that?
That's dope. That's dope.
You get it, brother. Welcome to the club.
Yes, sir.
Oh, I got to go after that now, huh?
Yeah.
Okay. All right. Mine's actually not sports related today, but this is an interesting thing. You guys familiar with like the ALS challenge? They did the ice bucket challenge.
Oh,
yeah.
And then
it was everything was a challenge, you know, lame things. This is pretty cool. Two guys, Dale and Nick, they sat down. They were at a restaurant. Strangers, they didn't know each other. One guy's black, one guy's white. And somehow they ended up just introducing one another. They sat down and just had a conversation just about racism, about current times, about, you know, what we're dealing with. And they taped it. And the guy didn't coin it. I'm going to call it the planting the seed challenge. You know, hopefully it'll take off and they'll name it. He basically made a challenge, which I'll play right now, to people to go and introduce yourself to someone of a different color and just say hi and just, you know, just be nice and see how it goes. And I'll play the clip for you.
So here's my challenge. Next time you're out Publix, Kroger, Walmart, I challenge you to be bold enough, be humble enough to go to a white person you never met. And if you're a white person watching this, go to a black person you never met. But you go tell them, how you doing? White people might look at you like, what do you want? You can say, hey, a lot of crazy stuff going on in America racially. Your life matters to me like mine should matter to you. If they receive it well, that's good. That ain't who you're looking for. You look for the ones who kind of just leave me alone. Planted the seed in the negative mind. When you're driving home, they're going to think about what you told them. And they can say, maybe I was wrong. You might not see that seed grow, but it will grow, I promise.
So that's just a small part. It's about a 5-minute video. It was from Facebook on a viral video gold. And it goes on that, you know, they're just talking about, this is an uncomfortable thing, but it needs to be discussed. So he's just putting that out as a challenge. The comments were really cool. Oftentimes I'll see a cool story on Facebook, but then you read the comments and it just ruins it.
Yeah,
totally. So the comments were great. It made some points about media pitting, you know, us against one another, so to speak. And I think this is a great way to kind of take control of the narrative and do what we want to do. And a lot of the people are saying, you know, we don't like racism. Sometimes it's trumped up a little. It's not as bad. I meet people all the time. It's cool. And then they talked about the media. So I just thought that was really dope. It's literally these guys, this was not planned. They just happened to bump into each other. And I don't even know who initiated the convo, but that was really dope to me.
It is dope. You know, and the thing is, too bad everything in this country can't be like music and sports, right? Yes. Where we don't see color, right? Yeah. We just enjoy the entertainment. All right, I got a good cop, bad cop. We're going to start you with the good cop. Bad cop will come later. This is in Green Bay, okay? A police officer named Daryl Robinson. Now, he was called to a local elementary school where this kid wasn't picked up from school. Well, according to the officials, the student, who was 8 years of age, his mama had just been arrested. So the police officer picks the kid up, takes him back to his house. And, you know, before he drops him off, he says, yeah, well, listen, are you OK? Because he's seen the kid before in the neighborhood. He says, yeah, it's just, you know, my mom's ain't around. He says, and it's my birthday. The cop says, your birthday? So the police officer took it upon himself to take the kid to McDonald's, to take the kid over to the police station. All the other policemen there are rolling with him, taking pics, giving him this and that, letting him ride in their cruisers, checking out different things they have that normal people, unless you're in there as a part of their employees, you don't get to see. So I'm going to say this for this particular cop, Daryl Robinson, back in Green Bay, 8-year-old. And by the way, when he was young on his birthday, it happened to him. The same thing. He wasn't 80. I think he was 12 years of age. And he showed pictures of him with a police officer doing the same thing to him. And he says, since then, I always wanted to be a cop. So for Mr. Robinson, good cop, dope.
Yeah, that's cool. I like that. Yeah. I like that. Awesome. I'm going to even say the story Ari you just told. That gave me goosebumps as well.
That's cool.
So, yeah.
We're off to a good start in here, man.
There you go.
I'm feeling it.
I know where you're going, I believe.
Yeah, I'm feeling it. You know I'm sticking with my Astros. So I got to go. My man George Springer, I'm gonna set the stage. 11th inning. The Astros have already been up by two runs once in the game. Dodgers came back to tie it, obviously. So we go to the 11th inning for the hashtag Springer Dinger.
That's into right center field. Well hit. Won't be caught. It is gone for a home run. George Springer goes deep, and the Astros are back on top by two.
And I've never in my life in sports felt the change of emotion that quickly. Just to go up with the Astros when they went up 5-3, then just to be crashed back down when the Dodgers tie it up. You go right back up when they go 7-5, and then the Dodgers make it 7-6 in the bottom of the 11th, and you know, one swing of the bat and you're right back where you were to begin with. So my man George Springer, hashtag Springer Dinger. That's dope.
You know what, and they caught some line drives before that home run.
Yes.
So you had to be
hard
concerned.
Hit balls.
Best game I've ever seen. Greatest baseball game I've ever seen in my memory in my life. How about you?
I agree. People have been talking about it all day. Was it the greatest World Series game ever? That's the greatest World Series game I've ever in my life watched. Obviously, it came out. It ended up on the right end with me being an Astros guy. So, greatest World Series game I've ever watched. Just because you don't see an explosion of power like that before. You've never in your life seen five home runs in extra innings before. You've never seen that. It's something that's never happened before, and we all got to witness it last night.
That was awesome.
All right. I'm just laughing because I know how happy you are. It's awesome. You're a huge Astros fan. It's good energy. All right. Mine is Walmart. Oh, this is something totally different. They're rolling out shelf-scanning robots in more than 50 U.S. stores to replenish their inventory faster and save employees time when products run out. I don't know if you guys shop at Walmart. I go at like 2 in the morning.
Oh, yeah.
And a lot of times...
Good people watching.
Oh, yeah, that too, definitely. And the staff are actually really... I'm not even joking. Like, they're on point at that hour, but the inventory is not. Because obviously, you know, it's 2 in the morning. But so I always have this problem. So I'm pretty excited if this is the case. They're approximately 2-foot robots in height. They come with a tower that is fitted with cameras that scan the aisles to check stock and identify missing and misplaced items, incorrect prices, and mislabeling. They also said it's not going to affect too much of the employee. I don't know if that's confirmed or not, but... They're saying they have a plan so that it's not really going to, you know...
Take jobs away from people.
Exactly, yeah. So, it's pretty dope. Check it out next time you're in Walmart. I don't know exactly. I didn't get a date to when they are going to officially start it off, but...
I like it.
When you're in there, people watching at 2 in the morning, check out a robot.
Okay. Green Bay was my good cop. My bad cop were taking you where else but the state of Florida, okay? Deputy Jason Cook, Palm Beach Sheriff. Dig this now. This older gentleman died in this house. They got him out. Basically, this deputy didn't know that they still had a video camera running in the house. So a day later, he comes back, breaks in the house, does the cop, and starts robbing the place. But he's on video and doesn't know it. So they show him going through the cabinets, closets, taking all the medicine from the old dude. Yeah. And then afterwards, they bust him, and he's like, okay, I resign. You got me. Okay, so bad cop gets busted, Jason Cook, who is a crook, and then he has to resign, so he's going to be up for trial. This right here, dude, is a dope.
That's a bad cop right there.
That's awful, man.
Serious.
That's awful.
He got busted. All right.
Oh, man.
You got one more for
us. Yeah,
I'll
keep it quick, too. My number three. This is the dopest of the dope.
I hate your guts for this.
Yeah, so I'm, another guy that works here, the Markness. If anybody out there listening knows who that is, we're going to Houston tonight. So we'll be at Minute Maid Park for Game 3. Man, it's gonna be awesome. Lance McCullers, Yu Darvish, got great seats. Got them actually a little earlier now that they're way more expensive now. So we lucked out, man.
But can I ask you how much?
$1,200.
Damn.
For lower level seats.
Okay, for both seats or
per seat. But 20, I'm not even going to front like my mother-in-law didn't. She when she found out me who I'm going with my wife's brother-in-law. But when she found out we were both going, she reached out and said she wanted to make the experience better for us.
That's
so
awesome.
So she was going to throw us some dough. Upgrade. So she threw us some money to help out with the tickets. Yeah.
Nice. Awesome. Good job. You got to come in here and light up with us in the future, man.
Yeah, I'm ready.
Dope is good.
Let's do it.
All right, here's what we're going to do because we're up against the clock, and I want to give this collage to the listeners. We may as well close it here, and then you put your breaks after you want to do that or not. You tell me.
Yeah, that works.
All right. Thanks to Scott Spreitzer, WagerTalk.com, our program director. Yes, Mark Seidel. He's headed down to the big game 3.
Thanks for having me, man.
Yeah. All right. And for Ari, I'm Seat William Folk. Chin's Tuck Low Guards Up High. We'll see you on the radio. More of the show next week. Yeah, NBC Sports 920, The Game. Game on. Game over.
Let's go Astros.
Yeah.
It's going to be the 76th pitch for Verlander. Seager, fly ball, left field, it's deep. Gonzalez to the wall. Gone, a home run. Corey Seager, out with the bad back, is all the way back. And the Dodgers have a 3-1 lead.
Here's the 0-2. And Marwin lifts this one pretty deep to left center field. Taylor on his horse going back at the wall. That's gone! That's gone! Marwin has tied it at 3! Marwin Gonzalez hits a home run to tie the score. His first home run of the postseason. And Kenley Jansen suffers his first career postseason blown save in 13 chances. Jordan Alvarez back as a 2-0 is drilled deep to left center field. Going back is Taylor looking up. See you later! Jose Altuve puts the Astros ahead in the 10th, 4-3. Altuve with his 6th home run of the postseason. 0-1, breaking ball, and that's hit well, pretty deep to left center field. And you can kiss that one goodbye. Back-to-back jacks for the Astros. First Altuve, and then Correa, 5-3.
On 2-1, fly ball, left field. Puig has hit it out. It is now 5-4. A leadoff home run for Puig in the bottom half of the 10th. The 3-1 to Hernandez. Ground ball. Base hit into right field. Here comes Forsythe. Throw to the plate, and he is safe. And the Dodgers have tied it at 5. Hernandez singles to right. Forsythe, the head first slide. The game is all even.
That's into right center field. Well hit. Won't be caught. Are back on top by 2.
Culberson on 1-0 with a fly ball to left field. That one is deep. That one is gone. The legend of Charlie Culberson continues to live at Dodger Stadium. It is now 7-6.
Devo delivers.
Swing and a miss. Puig strikes out, and that is the ball game. The Houston Astros defeat the Dodgers in 11 innings, 7-6, and they even the World Series at a game apiece. First ever World Series win in Astros history.